T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jaws off for a few days, sunning and funning down in Puerto Rico. I've not heard anything from her. No texts, no emails, nothing. She's gone radio silent, which is what you should do when you're on a vacation, trying to get away. Cut the cord. So I give her credit and I hope she's having a good time down there with handsome husband, with Mark. And she will be back on Friday with tales to tell. In the meantime, you know, Jordana is very vocal about her faith, how Judaism is really the center of her life. And she's not shy, as any of you who have listened to this show for more than 5 minutes know. Jor is not shy. She grew up in New Jersey. And the great thing about people out east, they tell you exactly how they feel about you. You know, there's no beating around the bush. There's no New York nice. It's kind of like this is the way it is. And Jor has some of that, and I love that about her. But she talks about Judaism and how important it is to her. Christianity is important to me. I'm a long ways from perfect, God knows. But and when people say, well, it's just a crutch, Paul, it's just a crutch. Nah, not so much. It's more of a leg. Not a crutch, but that's one of the tropes out there, right? Anybody who has faith in whatever, whoever you worship, it must be a weakness. No, I don't think it's a weakness. Maybe it's an admission that we need more. With us, with that intro, Joel Johnson, my pastor, I've been going out to Westwood Church out in Chanhassen for about a year, year and a half. I was raised Baptist, Lutheran, Presbyterian. My parents were shopping for a better deal, it seemed, all the time. Married a Catholic girl. Now I have a Jewish daughter-in-law. And that's what I love about Westwood. Everybody welcome.
Yep.
And Joel, it's so good to have you here on the air.
Paul, it's good to see you. Good to see you in your space, in your place, when I'm used to seeing you in my space and my place. I do have a beef with you. I don't blame you. I know you get a lot of blame.
You have a beef. You have to get to the back of the line, take a number.
Exactly. But the reality is, 6 consecutive weeks of harsh cold and a lot of snow has impacted all of our faith communities in significant ways. So if you could do something about it, I'd be grateful.
Wait a second. But people are still watching at home, right? If they
yes.
can't come or won't come because of the snow,
yes.
and you guys have taken the whole multimedia audio-visual experience to the next level, you do an amazing job with the cameras and the music and the...
Yeah, you really have to today. It used to be that churches had a come-to mindset. You have to come to their given location. They're location-centric. But today it's changed. It's audience-centered, and we have to go to where people are, and we have to use the different means of communication to try to do that. So it's been fascinating trying to lead a church in these changing times and what's expected and how we meet people where they're at. And yet we're called to do it. We try to do it in creative and compelling ways, and that's really helped us over the last 6 weeks. But we'd like people to be present as much as possible as well.
I'm going to work on that. I'm going to atone.
Very good.
Father, forgive me. I'm just the messenger. You have an app? And you have 3 different campuses, right? 3 different options now. You're expanding.
Yes. We're in Bush Lake campus, which is in Bloomington off of 494 and Bush Lake Road. Just opened that up in December. We're also in Minnetonka off of 494 and Minnetonka Boulevard. So this is a new expression of churches and multiple locations, but one church. We're all united together in one spirit, but we're trying to go where people are again.
And everybody and everything is being disrupted right now. I have a whole speech that I give to corporations talking about embracing change, and it's sort of against our human nature. It's almost like fighting gravity because we all get into a nice, comfortable rut. I don't care who you are. This is what I do, and I do it well, And I'd like to keep doing it this way. And you're telling me I've got to change. I have to adapt, new technology, new competitors. But you were talking about the disruption to churches here in Minnesota, here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah. It's really significant. I mean, attendance gets hit hard with the weather the way that we've had it, and it hits your finances. Now, again, because of online platforms, that's helpful to us. But even in our context, 60% of our giving comes through offering. That happens when you're present. And in many churches, you see the opposite. 60% is coming through online. So we're trying to move the needle along with other churches to that end. It brings more consistency, helps us to lead more effectively and manage the reality of what it means to be the church and do the church in today's world.
And you have an amazing statistic. What, 3,000 churches in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, there's actually a movement of churches. You know, churches get a lot of bad headlines today, unfortunately,
right. Yeah.
And yet they're validated, and we have to pay attention to that. But the good headlines, I wish they would arrive as well. Westwood is part of an embryonic movement of goodness, churches that get born into communities and bring good into those communities, not just for personal lives and families, but for the whole of communities. There are 3,000 churches in the Twin Cities. 1,500 of those churches were born before 1995. 1,500 have been born since 1995. And it's an accelerated
wow.
time of church planting, and it's a very exciting time to be in the Twin Cities. They're bringing a lot of good and the diversity of our Twin City area specifically.
And a lot of immigrants, right? I mean,
yeah, the immigrant piece of it is most fascinating, makes my heart beat fast. I'm thrilled with it. I know there's a lot of controversy over what's happening with the immigrant movement around our country, but the Twin Cities has 44% diversity. But when you look at the facts, there are 100 nations that are represented. The world has come to our doorstep. You think you travel to go see the world, but the world has come here. There's a lot to see in our own backyard. And you're finding the church planting movement accelerating among the immigrants as well. We're helping to launch a Tamil church in our Bush Lake property in the next month. And we're partnering together.
Tamil?
Yes, exactly.
Really?
Exactly. We're partnering with other people groups who have a vision to bring goodness and hope into communities through church planting. And it's a very exciting time to be in the Twin Cities. A third of the people who live in the Twin Cities are first and second generation immigrants. And what's astonishing is that by 2040, it will be more than 50%. All of us will be minority population groups at that time.
What do you tell, and I'm sure, and I'm going off script a little bit, but there's so much now concern about prejudice and discrimination. And I've gone on the air saying, look, God made us in different colors,
yeah.
right? And if you start questioning the color of somebody's skin, where they're from, the language they're speaking, in my mind, my interpretation of that is that to some degree, you're questioning the mind of God, and I find that to be
yeah.
a bad idea.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that when that subject comes up about welcoming all? Jesus welcomed all to the table.
Yeah, I agree that he did. I think we need to welcome and see the opportunity. You know, results are obtained by opportunity seized more than problems solved. And if we see everything as a problem, we never seize the opportunities. And there's so much good to come by being together. So in our context, we're using the language, an invitation that I'm giving again and again and again to proximate, to draw near to people who are different than you, who think differently, who have different lifestyles, who are different race, who have different religion. You learn a lot about yourself, but you learn a lot about people and how to be present with them. It removes your fear, and it makes you joyful. Glad for the opportunity to be together with people of a differing worldview than your own.
So getting out of your bubble pays dividends?
Significant. We're working hard at it at Westwood right now and encouraging people to do this. You know, we're in a community that's predominantly white still, probably 95%, something like that. Now it's starting to change, but it's slow change in the outer ring suburbs, but it'll be there soon enough. But we're encouraging people to partner and connect with churches of different ethnic groups, and we're intentionally strategizing, encouraging the people to proximate and giving them opportunities to do that. And they're seizing the opportunities, and it's a good thing in our context.
I want to talk about trends. You have some funny stories, including Arnold Palmer and a dead mouse. Not in the same story, but I want to get to that when we come back next. A conversation with Joel Johnson from Westwood Church. That's next on CCO. Paul Douglas, Joel Johnson, my pastor, my minister at Westwood Church. And I know you have a lot of fans. I know it's a tough gig. I'm sure a lot of people have concepts about what it must be like ministering to others. And we'll get to that maybe after the bottom of the hour. But I'm curious, how does one become a pastor? What was the path that brought you to Westwood? I know you got your start at Chanhassen Dinner Theater, right? So you started very modestly,
correct.
But your family, it sounds like, your family really has a history of serving.
Yeah, actually, you know, I think like anybody in their career pursuits, you're formed by the things that happen in your life. I think the crucible moments, the times of testing and trial that you have in your life, shape your life and your leadership more than any other force. And I grew up in the Minneapolis area, not in a faith-based family in my early childhood. We weren't church attenders. We didn't integrate faith into our homes. But my father was in the restaurant business. In fact, the oldest Mexican restaurant in the Twin Cities is Little Tijuana's down over on 26th Street.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I lived on top of that place as a young kid in South Minneapolis, and so I have a fond affection for that community. But when you're in the family restaurant business, you talk about a tough gig.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
And we all served. I had five sisters, one brother, J. Joel, Giles, and Jody, Jill, JC, and Josh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. My mom was pregnant from 1956 to 1963. No twins, 1 year apart. First three babies are all December babies, yeah, 1 year
woman.
Apart. Poor woman. Quite the deal. She was a courageous woman. But, you know, it put a lot of stress on the family. Restaurant open till 2 in the morning, so it just didn't bode well for the family. When I was 10, my parents were divorced. And I remember the day having lunch at my dad's restaurant, and we all got into the car, all seven kids, no seatbelts in those days. And she took us to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where her parents lived, my father's parents lived. We hung out there. No communication. They didn't communicate at that time that they were having marriage issues, but they were. And in a few months, they were divorced. But I was in fifth grade, and I wasn't doing well with that immediate change of context and neighborhood and friends, and didn't have friends, didn't do well in school.
It's a trauma.
It's really difficult, yeah. And there's a stigma. I was the only kid in my class who had come from a divorced home, so you felt that. And I was an introverted kid, and I was quite honestly lost for quite some time, but came out of it, and really because of a teacher. The power of a great teacher is an amazing gift in a kid's life. So the fifth grade experience was so difficult, the teachers spoke with my mom and thought it was best for me to stay back. So I flunked fifth grade. I don't know how you flunk fifth grade, but I did. And the crucible moment of my life certainly would have been the divorce of my parents, because you long for your parents to be together. But the crucible moment of my childhood was the first day of fifth grade the second time around and walking down that hallway. I can still feel that pressure and that moment as though it was yesterday. And the second time around fifth grade, I wasn't doing any better than the first time. And Mrs. Graves, my fifth grade teacher, could see that I was slipping away. And so she made me president of the class. I had no credentials for
presidency. Unilaterally,
she just did it.
By decree.
No, the other kids didn't even know that I was in the room. I was really unto myself. But she invaded my comfort zone. And her belief in me would change the very trajectory of my life. So I learned serving by being in restaurants, because everybody in the family participated. We contributed to the work in the restaurant. I learned courage from my mom, who's amazing, as a single mom raising seven kids.
Wow.
But I learned what it meant to prevail by stepping into a world pressed by other people who helped me see things about myself that I could not see in that given moment. I wasn't going to be defined by that from her perspective, and she helped me not to be as well. I think that experience postured me well for what would happen later in my life. I had a mystical experience in terms of faith, quite honestly. And because I didn't grow up in faith, it wasn't a career path. I had started a business in college. I was working the business, always thought I'd be in business. And a woman said to me, I think you're going to be a pastor someday. It happened just like that. I wasn't even attending a church.
She anointed you.
She did. And I said to a friend, how do you get involved with a church? And that was going to be new territory for me. And I went and met God in powerful, life-transforming ways, told my father, who wanted me to take over the restaurants here in Minneapolis, that I wasn't going to do that, and I moved in a whole other direction, and I'm very glad that I did.
Well, I am too. A lot of others are glad you did too. And And again, how did you start at the Chanhassen Dinner Theater? Yeah, this was just an idea on a napkin. How did this start?
I had been at Wooddale Church for 15 years, and there was a vision for planting churches there, and I helped manage that, and an opportunity was given to me to go out to Chanhassen. So I didn't know Chanhassen really existed a whole lot more than the Dinner Theater, but really what a great community it is, the home of Prince, the Arboretum. Yep. I mean, just a great, great community. But there were no meet, so there were 90 people. We met in the Chanhassen Dinner Theater. One of the first obstacles we faced was tables. You couldn't move the tables in the Dinner Theater. And we questioned whether or not a church could grow in a dinner theater when you came as a guest and you'd have to sit at a two-top, four-top, or a six-top. You know, talk about invading comfort zones. But
Serve drinks during
that? Well, you had to walk through the bar to get through the main room. You did, absolutely. Okay. It was our hospitality space, and not everybody liked it. But my father, who was not a church-going man and would not attend church, and when I was even at Wooddale, which I loved that experience there, but the churches have stained glass barriers to some where they wouldn't even think about coming into a church space. My father came on Christmas Eve. It's the first time he ever saw me in ministry.
Wow.
And it was a very moving experience to have him come in. But a dinner theater was like a restaurant and a bar, and he had restaurants and bars. It was home for him. And I'll just say God blessed us powerfully in that first year in the Chanhassen Dinner Theater. I'll be forever grateful for the Dinner Theater and working together with them collaboratively. It was a great experience.
Well, you've done an amazing job, and I know you have a great team.
Indeed.
No one person can do it all, but in terms of being the visionary and the leader, very impressed with what you've built. And I want to kind of come full circle and talk a little bit, because people still, thank God, respond to stories. And you have some really cool stories that I've been exposed to. And I remember sitting in the congregation saying, you know what, I think some of our listeners, maybe many of our listeners, would enjoy hearing some of these stories. It's not Bible thumping. It's just people helping people.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here, right? We're here at the end of the day to help each other. And we lose sight of that in the world. So anyway, more with Joel Johnson, his adventures, what gets him up, what gets him down, what's next. That's coming up on CCO. All back with you.
Hey, what do you think of this weather, Paul?
It's wet. Kind of happy to see rain. I'm happy to see 40s in the forecast. It may hit 50 late next week. And as much as I want it to be 70 with chirping birds and lawnmowers droning away, I pray that doesn't happen anytime soon, because if that happens, that will make a bad flood situation potentially historic. So, yeah, we want it to warm up, but hopefully it's going to be a nice, gradual, slow-motion meltdown in the coming weeks. Not too many rainstorms like the one we're having this week. And that may tell the tale if we get more storms later in March and early April that produce heavy rain. A line of thunderstorms coming through, that would be problematic with all the snow that we have on the ground. So it's an ongoing story. Jordana is off. She's back on Friday. I am joined by my pastor, Joel Johnson, at Westwood Community Church in Chanhassen. Joel, welcome back.
Thank you.
What keeps you going? I mean, what energizes you? What excites you? What keeps you up? Other than the obvious, of course.
There are so many things. Yeah, the obvious is there. But the community of faith that is Westwood, is just a beautiful place with beautiful people. It's energizing to me every day. But the community that we serve in makes a difference as well. You mentioned stories. One of my favorite stories is that we use in our context to give a picture of our values and what we want to be about in community, both internally, externally, is related to Arnie Palmer, the great golfer, who got this beautiful invitation to go golf in Saudi Arabia for 3 days in a tournament. He accepted that invitation, and the king of Saudi Arabia wanted a personal meeting with him, and it was arranged. And so Arnie meets with the king of Saudi Arabia, and the king of Saudi Arabia wants to give him a gift, a memento of his time in his country. And you know, Arnold Palmer is well-to-do. He doesn't need more things or whatever. And he just says it's a privilege to play golf in your country and get to know your people. And he could tell that he had perhaps offended the king of Saudi Arabia. And so rethought his answer and said, well, okay, a nice memento would be a golf club. And delivered to his hotel the next morning in an envelope was the title to a golf club, 160 acres with the clubhouse and everything else that goes with it.
Not just a 7-iron, but an actual club.
The whole thing.
Holy cow.
The moral of the story is, in the presence of a king, don't ask for small gifts. And that's a mindset. It's a posture in terms of how we view each other and are with each other. We have the King of Kings. We have a God who expresses the power of generosity. And the power of generosity is to bring good into the world. It energizes me to be in a community where there are great schools, there are great businesses, there are great city leaders and planners, there are great service clubs like Rotary. We get to work together, and we do work together with them. And so that's the call, I think, to be able to do good things together. We're addressing collaboratively together with Rotary and other business leaders the need of homeless teens in our community and in our county. And we have got a home on our property, and it's called the Hope House, and we've got 6 beds, and we provide that for 3 to 6 day stays for kids who find themselves, you know, on a couch or nowhere, and we seek to help. But we don't do that alone. We work with the city leaders. Kate Anderson's a city planner out in Chanhassen, and I just have such respect for her. When we came and started building the facility, she said, Joel, you know, we have the same thing in common. We both are building community. And I think to bring good into community, it takes businesses and schools and all the forces in the community. We're better together when we're in it together. We're not better together just because we're together. We're better together when we're in it together.
Absolutely. And yet, the nature of life on this planet, I mean, nobody was ever promised an easy life, right? Nobody gets that guarantee. All of us deal with adversity, disappointments, deaths in the family, friends passing away, you know, not getting that promotion, maybe getting fired instead. What do you say to people who come to you with concerns about the everyday setbacks, right? Life is a roller coaster. It always was. It always will be.
Yeah. And I just had it happen before I came down. My care pastor came in and told me that one of our members died unexpectedly. And it's a hit to me just before I came down here as well. But I go, that's my everyday reality. And that's people's everyday reality. I just told the story, and you were present.
The mouse story. I love that story.
You like that story.
Because all of us can identify with this story.
Yeah, it's a picture of, to me, everyday reality. But a week ago, I got into my car, and it was this horrible smell. And the reality is I have a mouse that's somewhere caught in my engine area, and the vent is opened and bringing in that smell. So it's impacting my life. I've had disappointment this week because, you don't want that kind of experience, and my wife won't even travel with me in the car, so I have to deal with that reality.
Is that why you're going to the car show?
That's right. I am going to the car show.
There's no coincidence.
I'm getting rid of the car.
A new car.
I am.
A mouse-free car, yeah.
And as I thought about it, because I had to think about it every time I got into the car, I was mindful of the journey of life. There's a continuum in life where you have disappointments, and sometimes they're just annoyances. But on that continuum, there are discouragements. And other times, there's desperations. There's real despair. But when we look at the whole of life, we find that also in those disappointments are excitements. And interwoven with discouragements are encouragements. And interwoven with desperations are exhilarations. Both and are part of life and journey. God did not promise that suffering would not be part of our journey. Indeed, he said there would be suffering, but to trust him in it. And so, you know, the invitation is to try to attend to people in the reality. Be present. Try not to fix everything. Just be present with them. It makes a difference. It's very, very helpful. I think coming alongside of people to bring encouragement to keep hope alive is really important, too. And how you keep hope alive can be a challenge sometimes. You know, you talk about flooding. We're in the whole weather deal. Well, that happens emotionally too. You know, there's a range of flooding emotionally, and disappointments and discouragements impact us emotionally. Anxiety is a heightened sense of concern, a diminished sense of control. You have, the more concern you have, the less control you feel, the more anxiety you have. And so flooding takes place. And sometimes for many people, they're flooding to the degree that they feel like they're underwater, can't come up for breath. We have the privilege to be with people in those places and invite them to trust God in it, because I think God provides. I think that's the story of Arnold Palmer. The things that God gives to us aren't things. It's love. It's joy. It's peace. it's hope, it's strength, it's patience, and he gives it in abundance. And we get to come alongside of people, just be with them, validate their pain place, but then also hopefully bring encouragement to them in their journey.
And yet many of us have placed our riches and our faith in consumable goods, right? I mean, stuff, and I'm as guilty as everybody else, right? It's easy to be lured down that road that I am the measure, I am the sum total of where I live and what I drive and where I vacation, and yet that's not the measure of a man.
No, I think everyone, nearly everyone at least, maybe I shouldn't say everyone, somewhere in their journey comes to the realization, to the truth about ourselves, that our beauty and our brains, that our skills and our capacities, our money or whatever it is, luck, that you were hoping for your life to come out a certain way and you realize this isn't quite how I had envisioned it, it comes to roost, it sits with us. And those are gift places, because then we come to understand that there is something greater and more beautiful that provides for us even in the hardest of places. And that's the message we get to bring into the world, and it's a message that's most needed today.
See, I'm, as a scientist, and I am a scientist on a good day, I've looked at the evidence and I've come to the conclusion that it's either the greatest conspiracy in the history of man or it's true. And I've come to the conclusion, and other people have come to different conclusions. But you're pretty confident that there's more than we can see and measure and observe, and more than the scientific method allows us to see today. There's something more?
I see it every day. I see it every day, and I'm so grateful. When we have our eyes open to the reality that there is a God, we see God show up, and he does things. And there are no other explanations for some of the things that happen. And even in those times of need, of disappointment and discouragement and disillusionment that you might have, we're never ready, but we're always prepared to be with people at their given points of challenge and discouragement.
Any other words of wisdom for people who might be listening, who may be going through a tough patch right now?
Yeah. And I said, interesting you use the word wisdom. Wisdom to me is a gift that comes from God first and foremost. It's the gift that helps us know what to do, know where to go, know who to become, to know what to say. And I think you can get good counsel from many people. There's much counsel to be received that's helpful. But I also believe the best counsel comes from God, from his word, and invite people just to open it up and see for themselves and begin to have an anticipation and expectation. Ask God to show up, and he does.
Maybe not exactly when you think he will.
True,
right?
True.
When or where?
I'm with you on that, but it's good.
But put it out into the universe, and you may be pleasantly surprised. All right, stick around. I want to have a few minutes here to say goodbye to Joel Johnson here, but we need to pay some bills. It's 4:46. Thank you, Joel. Paul Douglas, thank you for tuning in. And, you know, there's an old axiom in radio, you can do anything once. So I'm having my pastor on today because I can. And I hope, you know, I don't think you've offended anybody. You certainly haven't offended anybody more than Jordana and I offend people on a daily basis. But I think your words ring true. And it doesn't really matter what you believe, what your faith is. You and I are Christians. But people are really searching more than ever. And I think we make it so complicated. At the end of the day, it's love thy neighbor as thyself. At the end of the day, the bottom line is love, right?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. Whether you're a Christian or not, no matter your faith orientation, or if you don't have a faith orientation, there's a common need. And I think the common need of every little boy and every little girl and grown man and woman is to love and to be loved. And we have a phrase in our setting: if we could only get the love thing right, there's no end to what we could be or do for God's honor and for the good of humanity. It's just we don't always get the love thing right. I don't always get the love thing right. I really want to, but connecting my want to my will to could be challenging at times. And there's three, what I call them, three laws of love in my own life. It's been many years I've sought to let this be a compass for me, and it's been helpful, and I'm challenged, and I don't fulfill it all the time. But the first law of love is to see people the way God sees people. He sees people from the inside, not the outside first. We're so quick to judge on the outside. I'm so glad for a God who looks on the inside first. The second law of love is to treat people the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule. It's basic civility. Mm-hmm. And we need to return to basic civility. And the third law of love is to love people the way God loves you. And oh, how God loves you. And I think the invitation is stop long enough to find the love of God. It will change the journey that is yours in very personal, profound ways, helpful ways to marriages, friendships, businesses, everything. The power of love. Yeah, it's everything.
And I've noticed, too, and maybe equating it to a tune-up for your car is the wrong analogy. But, you know, I've accepted Christ, and a lot of people might say, well, okay, you got the gift. Okay, great. Just live your life, and you got the gift. But it's really important to have those tune-ups, right? I mean, as human beings, it's easy to hit the guardrails or to go veering off the highway. Yeah. So it's important, no matter what your faith, where you're going to church, even if you're not going to church, maybe at times just to reach out and how do people improve?
Oh, I'll guarantee you, everyone has what I call GPs, God promptings. And so sometimes we listen to them and sometimes we do not. But he pursues us, even when we've drifted away, even when we show no interest, he keeps pursuing us. And I think the call is to pay attention to the God prompting. Stop long enough when you have one and say, what does this mean? Ask questions. Inquire with people who may know more than you do in the journey and see where that might take you. It's a great adventure, and it's something to navigate. And goodness will follow all the days of your life, is the promise of Scripture, as you begin to walk in his path.
So reaching out doesn't show weakness. I mean, it really shows strength.
Yeah. In today's world, it shows courage as well. Yeah, it's, you know, the church has been center to so much of American life. It's been marginalized in this last decade. So we're leading from the margins. That's a great place to lead. I love the fact that Jesus powered under, not over, and we get to do the same. Bring a power of humility, of joy, and love into the world that is longing for it.
Is there a reawakening going on now, today?
There is. Yep. Matter of fact, there's a language in the world of literature that I read called kaboom movements, talking about the acceleration of churches and growth in the world. China's experiencing it right now. I believe the Twin Cities is experiencing a pocket of what is a kaboom movement, an acceleration of God's love and churches that are getting planted to bring goodness into our communities in our own backyard.
And immigrants are, in many cases, leading that charge.
Oh, it's huge. In Bloomington, for instance, there are 80 churches in Bloomington, and 40 of them are immigrant churches.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of our fabric today. We ought to embrace it, celebrate what it means that we get to live in such a diverse population. It's a gift.
Well, Joel, you've been amazing, as I knew you would be. You were a little nervous about doing this.
This is not my platform, my friend.
It's not my platform either. I'm scared to death every day going on the air. But I knew you would be a natural, and you speak from the heart, and you're authentic, and you tell great stories. And people still respond to great stories and authenticity. So thank you for taking that chance, getting out of your comfort zone, and coming on the air.
It's my privilege. Next time I'd like Jordana to be present, because the Abrahamic covenant is very much part of our purpose and existence at Westwood. I'd love to have a conversation with her about that someday.
Oh, Joel, be careful what you wish for. You know, we could do that.
Yeah.
And maybe she'll bring in her rabbi.
Yeah, that would
that
be fun.
That
would be fun.
That would be very interesting. Joel Johnson, Westwood Church, God bless. Thank you for ministering to all of us, regardless of our faith. Appreciate that, my friend.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, what's going on in California? They must be drinking too much Pacific Ocean water. This college admissions test, the latest, coming up after the break.
Finally, some good news for Mille Lacs walleye anglers. That's at 503 on WCCO and KMNB-FM HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.